Discussing Network presents Discussing Comics. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to welcome back the man who breaches reality on all of his podcasts, from Reality Breached, Sergio Lujo II. How are you?
Fantastic, Kyle.
Welcome. So how's holidays going for you?
Hectic. We have a new baby, so like the entire process is twice as difficult during a pandemic.
Well, considering something that might also be twice as difficult in a pandemic, you and I have a habit of this time of the year discussing your most anticipated movies of the coming year.
Mm-hmm.
Have you even thought about that, considering the fact that the majority of the ones that we talked about for this year didn't come to fruition because of the pandemic?
Well, I have thought about it. It's going to be a lot of copy and paste from last year.
Yeah.
Minus a few titles here and there, but it doesn't mean I'm not excited about next year's movies. So
cool. Well, I think it would be most exciting for you to be able to say that you won't have to copy and paste the New Mutants.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So, Clarence Brown, how are you, my friend? Welcome back.
Hey, man. Glad to be back as always. And I guess I'm semi-excited to talk about this movie.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will. I am perplexed. I'll put it that way, to talk about this movie, because I don't really know what I want to say about it. But for everyone listening, if you are listening to us and you saw the name of the episode, we are talking about Wonder Woman 1984. So I will go ahead and say at this point, if you have not seen Wonder Woman 84, go out, watch the movie, come back, or actually put us on pause, go out, watch the movie, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers. Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and Sergio, since you are our esteemed guest, I will say, some review. What did you think of this movie?
Disappointing is a bit of an overstatement, because I feel like you have to have some sort of excitement built in, and I just didn't have much going into it, and then the movie happened, and I kind of felt the exact same way after it. It's like a movie that I experienced, but that's about it.
I kind of agree with Sergio. I don't know if I had any personal excitement built up about this movie, but if you look at the grand scheme of things, the grand scope, it was a lot of excitement around it, at least initially, maybe before the whole pandemic went down. Yeah, I guess I was kind of amped up to see it because it still is the biggest movie other than Tenet of 2020, I would say. So I was expecting to be wild, although I wasn't just really anticipating the movie. You know, it wasn't really on my radar as a must-see of this year, but we'll get into some of the details about it. What about you, man?
I'm going to agree with you guys, but I will change the part of what you said. You wasn't sure if this or you didn't know if this was a must-see, or it probably wasn't a must-see for you this year. It was a 100% must-see for me, but I left watching it feeling like, wow, this was underwhelming, as in it felt like it just drug on a little bit. So I want to ask this question, and this is something that, Clarence, you and I touched on the other evening when we were talking about it, I think Sunday or Saturday evening, which was, is this the result of knowing that it was coming out in June? It gets pushed back to August. It gets pushed back again to October. And then it gets pushed back to December the 25th, which kind of, to me, makes it even more special. It's on Christmas Day. Did it pump it up with expectation and then deflated it a little bit, maybe? And this is a question for anybody.
Well, possibly. But I'm thinking of, if you think of a larger picture of what platform maybe a lot of people saw this on. So I was a bad adult. I saw it in the theater. Sorry, guys. bad adult right here. But I saw it in the theater. And when you think about, you know, we talked about the 2020 movie slate not hitting as it should because of the pandemic, of course. And now this movie is on a platform that maybe more people that wouldn't have seen it otherwise are now watching it, possibly. I mean, I don't know how you equate, you know, HBO Max eyeballs compared to box office dollars, but I would say maybe more people who wouldn't have saw it are seeing it now. That could play into it. In any case, definitely hyped up. And when you think of what HBO Max did with this movie to what we find out they're going to do with all their movies in the upcoming year, 2021, is this is the first one they're going to put on this streaming service as well as theaters. So I think that may have added a little more weight to this, to the hopes that this would be a successful launch.
And I'm actually just going to double down on that specific sentiment. This movie was just a movie 6 months ago, or, you know, a year ago, but the backflips that Warner Brothers went through to make sure that Wonder Woman 1984 was always on your newsfeed or on your lips as a movie fan for the last 6 months really put this movie on a pedestal that there was no way it could live up to, even if it was great. Because when Warner Brothers made that huge announcement that all of their movies for the next year are going to be going straight to HBO Max, the first movie they would list is Wonder Woman 1984. This is going to be our tentpole. This is how you're going to watch movies for the foreseeable future. It's exciting. And then it comes out and we're like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Sergio, I almost agree with you. I agree with you 100% about Wonder Woman 1984. But if I were to go back 2 years or 3 years, 2017, whenever the first one came out, and say that everything that happened in this year happened in 2017. And so we had the same situation, but we reinsert Wonder Woman, the movie, not Wonder Woman 1984, the sequel. I think Wonder Woman, the first movie, would have lived up to that tentpole movie as compared to this one.
I actually would agree.
Yeah, it's a better movie.
It is. Yeah. It's so much better movie. And I would go so far as to say this reminds me of the, I think it was the second Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, where as in the story, there was so much going on and they were trying to introduce so many concepts at once that it just felt jumbled because you had too much going on. I mean, when I was watching this Friday night, that popped into my head. This wasn't me thinking later. It was like, this reminds me of the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. And I was kind of surprised. Again, I saw it in theaters first and I went to pull it up to just kind of, you know, hit it real quick before we talked about it tonight. And I saw that it was 2 hours and 30 minutes. Now, I felt it was long in the theaters, but man, I did not realize it was that long. And to the movie's defense, if you look at the Rotten Tomato scores for the movie, the audience score is 72% and the tomato meter is 62%. So definitely not the worst among DC movies that we've seen as of late. It does seem like this movie has sort of that divide that you've seen with the recent Star Wars movies. You know, people either love it or hate it, you know. But it seems like most of the people I personally know don't like it. So I don't know what that says about me. But
actually, that's kind of what I've come across as well, is everyone has said, well, I'm glad I didn't have to go to the theater to watch that.
Oh, man.
And you know what? I think I'm the biggest Wonder Woman fan of the three of us. And I will actually say I was satisfied watching it on my TV as opposed to paying and going to see it in the theaters, because I just, they took some liberties with the stories. I know I have an issue with that because, you know, if you want to go the purest route, oh, well, you messed with that. And, you know, they've made with Marvel, they've taken liberties with the stories. And I don't sit here and dissect that like I did this. I want to talk next about a liberty that they did. And Clarence, I want to point this one actually to you first, because I think you've got some thoughts about this one. Steve Trevor came back. Thoughts?
Now, I know enough of this to know that it's a reoccurring thing for him to keep coming back in the comics. That is right in that assessment, right? Correct?
Correct. Pre-crisis, yes, he would die, come back, die, come back, die, come back. Yes.
That being said, you know, when I look back at the movie and, you know, again, I just watched it again and try to dissect where I started falling off on like versus dislike of this movie. When he appears, that's one of the things. I had huge problems with it in a sense of, and correct me if I'm wrong, he's inhabiting this guy's body the whole time.
Yep.
Why couldn't they just make him appear as another dude? What's the point of him being somebody else's body? I didn't get it. It was creepy. And I really don't think he added a lot to the movie. This might be one of the most unflattering things I've seen Chris Pine in, to be honest. He wasn't really particularly impressive to me in this movie. I can see why he was there for Diana, but still, I think we could have done without him in this movie.
Hmm. Sergio, what about you?
I was completely unaware that he comes back in the comics, which is a very comic book thing. But I was almost, as a moviegoer, it was very off-putting for him to be back. Because for you know, if we're talking real lifetime, let's say he died in World War One. This is set in the 80s, so we're talking, what, 60, 70 years?
Yep.
And Diana has been living a life consistently since then. to think that it's been 70 years and she hasn't met anyone else, or that she's so caught up on this one dude 70 years later, knowing that he wouldn't have been around anyway for 70 years, is, it doesn't do the Wonder Woman character any favors.
No, and it doesn't do his character any favors. And back in, you know, I'll say this briefly, back in the pre-crisis, the one thing I have to remember, Wonder Woman has been published steadily since 1941. So you would go through eras to where the love interest of the 50s and 60s that she had to have a boyfriend, then Steve had to come back in some way magical, whatever way to bring him back they did. And then maybe in the 70s, let's get rid of him. He gets killed, and then so forth and so on and so forth. I just found it creepy. I'll mirror what you guys are saying. I found it totally creepy that a character all about truth is basically with somebody else. And whenever I say with, I mean that in the biblical sense. She is with someone else who is not him, but she's thinking that it's him. And it's like, that's just, ooh.
Yeah. In addition, I think all of the fish out of water aspect of him being in the story, it all fell flat to me. It all really fell flat. I think they could, if the 80s, the out of place Steve Trevor in the 80s was the goal, I think they failed tremendously in making those jokes, which I think they were meant to be a comedic part of the story. I think they failed to make those land. And maybe it's just that trope is played out at this point, the 80s, maybe. But those jokes that they tried to do with him, I just kind of cringe, to be honest.
And I think they fell flat because this series has already seen that. Like, Diana was the fish out of water in the last movie.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Good point. Good point. Huh. Yeah, they're just doing it.
This is a situation to where I think that they're pigeonholed between two movies, meaning you've got the first movie set in World War One, then you've got Superman versus Batman, when Wonder Woman, to the public, they establish is introduced, and this is firmly established in their movie lore. So you can't have her be public, per se, in 1984. But I just didn't like the whole focus just on the year and like you guys were saying, playing up the aesthetic so much that it was not just set in 1984. Let's talk about the clothes that they're wearing and et cetera and so forth, that it actually became part of the story to some degree.
It's interesting that you say that, because I would actually like strongly disagree. I didn't think that they did enough to justify its existence in 1984.
Cool. Elaborate.
Like other than Diana wearing funny clothes, and no one having cell phones, like there's not much about the story that is inherently 80s. It's just, hey, the 80s are kind of hot right now.
Yeah.
Let's get
those Stranger Thing vibes.
Yeah. Let's make a marketing campaign that looks like Thor. And, oh, yeah. And then what we'll do is say that it's in 84, tell a generic story. Doesn't have to necessarily be set in 1984, but we're going to do it because that's what the name of the movie is.
Yeah, I think you're right. It could have been now. It really could have been now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just think the 1980s aesthetic as a major factor of your television show or movie, I'm not going to say it's played out, but it's just been done a lot. Even the little girl that she saves in the mall reminds me of the little girl on Stranger Things. Yes. Reactions are the exact same. Yep. They pretty much just copied that character. It had me wondering on some parts of the movie, are they going for camp? Because even the guys that rob the jewelry store at the very beginning, or the antique store at the very beginning, it felt so campy and, oh, we got these cheesy robbers, you know. They weren't particularly menacing. Maybe that was the point. I don't know. But it all felt cheesy. Although I did like the mall scene. I did like that overall. But just to comment on the overall aesthetic of why they're bringing the 80s into this.
Yep. Yep, I agree. And I'm sitting here thinking about all the things that Stranger Things did right with the 80s. They did it's so right with the 80s, even if they went to the mall and they're in the mall and they're eating and they go to Burger King, they have Burger King fries in a container that was around, or, you know, it's made to look like the same containers that they had. That much attention to detail. And I know this is a movie, and but if you're going to make this in your title, Wonder Woman 1984, I think you need to paint with that much detail if you're going to focus your title 1984.
Yeah. And again, to Sergio's point, other than the mall and Trevor's clothes, Steve's clothes, what else was 80s in the movie?
Yeah. Yeah. Not only is the movie set in the 80s, but the outcome of the movie in the end, where your big bad guy somehow reaches out to every single electronic device on the planet, that is very much not an 80s plot.
No.
Yeah.
Because in the 80s, computers weren't nearly as connected as they are today. So the plausibility of him being able to do what he did is completely out the window.
Yeah. There's something very similar that happens. Isn't it a story like that on Doctor Who, Kyle?
Yeah, yes. There's a similar episode, I think this is what you're referring to, where the Master in a finale goes, and this is in 2000, set in 2006, where the Master goes and programs your phones to have a message, and he's got this shortwave network that he takes over. But again, this is 2005 as opposed to 1984.
Mm. And even the way they frame that the particles are touching everything, it really didn't make a lot of sense. And maybe that's my I know we're skipping around, but maybe that's my problem with the movie. In addition to some of the 80s stuff feeling a little off, I didn't really. Is it Maxwell Lord? What's his name?
Yes, Maxwell Lord.
Maxwell Lord. I love Pedro Pascal. I thought he did an awesome job with what they gave him, but I really hated that character. I really did.
Well, other than his name being Maxwell Lord, this was not Maxwell Lord, in my opinion. They took a original almost. He's from the very first issues of Wonder Woman, the Duke of Deception. They took this campy character from the 40s and meshed him with a diabolical madman, as I will call him, Maxwell Lord, and created a cringeworthy villain. So, Sergio, what did you think of Max?
I do love Pedro Pascal, and I wanted to like his character in this movie. And I liked a lot of aspects of him. I liked the whole salesman thing at the beginning. I liked him trying to be charismatic. I feel like he plays that part really, really well. But once the rubber met the road towards the end of the movie and his motivations started to just fall apart, the character himself just fell apart. Like even all of the emotional attachments to like his son and whatnot, they're supposed to feel heavier than they were, but I didn't get that from the end of the movie.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I feel like in the end they tried to make him a redeemable character, but really, other than them showing his son and I guess a connection to please his son, there was no redeeming qualities in his character. He was a pyramid scheme guy. He was a swindler. I mean, by the end, he is forced to make the right decision. I guess for the sake of his son that was wandering around in the forest at the end of the park where he was. Like, what? How did he land a helicopter right by? Anyway, they tried to make his character feel redeemable by the end, but they really didn't earn that. They just tried to tell us he's redeemable because he made the right decision by force at the very end of the movie.
See, and this is where I am blurred. My vision is blurred by the comics. In the comics, and spoiler for anyone who doesn't know anything about Maxwell Lord, but in the comics, he does have a power and he can control people's minds. He's basically, you know, he can possess people. And what I know Maxwell Lord most for is the fact that Wonder Woman snapped his neck at one point and killed him. Because he took control of Superman and she used the lasso. And he said, while in the lasso, when you let me go, I'm going to take control of Superman again and start killing people. And so she knew he's telling the truth. So she saw no other way to stop him than, you know, to kill him.
So was that like a kind of a tie into the lasso on his leg at the end of the movie, I guess?
Maybe, perhaps. Yeah. Yep. I bet so. I bet so.
Like, I want that version of this movie.
And yeah, you could have had awesome. That. That would have made a lot more sense if he was taking control. If he was using his mental powers to take control of people to do his bidding. But I felt like I was watching Wonder Woman meets the Wishmaster. Remember the cheesy, sort of cheesy horror movies, Wishmaster?
Yeah. I absolutely did not like the wishing aspect of this plot.
Well, speaking of a wish, and since you didn't like that, Sergio, I'm going to start with you on this question. Someone who got what she wished, Barbara Minerva. Thoughts of Barbara, the cheetah.
Cheetah. I really like Kristen Wiig in almost everything she does. And I liked her in this. I even thought it was a cool transformation at the end. I don't know if it makes sense exactly, but her aspect of this movie is one that I don't have too many complaints. Like, it was cool.
I agree. I think she was amazing in this movie. I loved everything about her other than the last act when she makes that final transformation. And maybe it's more so the fight, how the fight ensues that kind of throws me off. But I think showing her, I mean, you get to see both sides of her. You get to see her as she's this more nerdy, kind of clueless character helping the homeless. And we get to see that transformation to where she's power hungry and, you know, misguided by the end of it. So I thought how they showed that play out on screen was awesome. In fact, we get to see her get revenge on the creepy guy in the park that tried to do whatever to her. So yeah, I thought she was awesome.
Yep. You know, I'll agree with both of you. I have only seen her in comedic roles, and seeing her in this, the first, what I would say a drama piece or a serious piece she's done, I thought she was actually one of the highlights of the movie for me. I agree that fight scene kind of made me cringe, and she didn't have the look that I wanted her to have for the cheetah. But that being said, I thought she did a fantastic job. I don't like tying her origin end with this, the way they did with Maxwell Lord. I don't like that. And that's where I'm saying I feel like they tried to do a little bit too much. I think if you would have just made it a story about Barbara Minerva turning into the cheetah and being Wonder Woman's friend, who she then has to go fight and cut off 30 minutes of the movie, I think it would have been a much stronger movie than what it was.
Yeah, and I think they did a good job. I don't know if they told her to go watch Christopher Reeves or whatever, but I think she did a good job in that transformation to almost make me feel like it's a totally different person. She really nailed the clueless nerdy person versus the confident badass person. Yeah, so I think that was really well done.
And to bring the Amazing Spider-Man 2 back into this conversation, Kristen Wiig as Cheetah is way better than Jamie Foxx as Electro.
Yes.
Indeed.
Indeed. Very, 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 very much so. So there were some tropes, and I know that they may have been a little bit cheesy, but there was a couple of things that I really, really liked. So I'll start first on this one. I love seeing, and the way they explained, even though it was her and him and they were having their moment flying in the plane, I just love seeing her have an invisible plane because she couldn't fly at first in this, and she had the plane. I just thought that was freaking fantastic. Fanboy in me loved that. But I'm curious, what did you guys think? What did you guys think of the invisible plane?
Clarence, I'm going to let you go first on this.
Oh, man. I don't feel like it was earned. I don't feel like it was earned in a sense of we set up the idea of this invisible plane with her saying, I practice magic on a teacup or something. I don't know what it was. I wish they would have just, they didn't even have to have that exposition. They could have just showed her doing that at the very beginning of the movie. That's all they would have had to do. Then I would have been hook, line, and sinker. Yes, that's awesome. But you can't, I don't feel like you can do something that miraculous and not really earn it. Tell me in exposition a second before you actually do it that you can do this thing that I've never seen you do before. It just felt off. Now, I wouldn't say the invisible plane itself was cheesy, but I just think the setup was a huge letdown.
All right, Sergio.
I have a distinctly different opinion because the invisible jet to me has always just been one of those silly things that I would assume they wouldn't touch just because you really have to go into the left field to start thinking of ways to justify it in a Hollywood movie, you know, but it's also one of those things that every single layperson knows. Oh, Wonder Woman, she has an invisible jet. I wonder if that's going to show up in this movie. And if I was in Vegas and they were to, you know, ask me, so how much money are you going to put down? Just to, you know, to say that the invisible jet is going to be in this new movie, I would have been like, I'm not taking that bet at all. Why would you ever do that? So just to see them doing it made me smile because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sure, it was a little sloppy, but just the fact that it's there was good enough for me.
Hmm. Let me say this. So I did have the fanboy moment of liking seeing it, but Wonder Woman does not have the ability to turn things invisible. So, Clarence, I will agree with you that this, I've learned this from my father. Let me do this now. I did not like that. Love seeing it. Didn't like how they did it.
So how does the jet get invisible in the comics?
That was my question that I was about to ask.
I think it has something to do. They actually, in the 90s or early 2000s, I think they explained it as the Amazon has had some kind of technology that they covered this plane with this reflective or translucent material that made it appear invisible. But probably back in the 40s, it was most likely magical. Everything was, you know, magical from the mysterious Paradise Island.
Yeah. I love that even though clearly the jet is invisible, but it somehow hides it from radar too. Like they didn't explain. Okay. So it's metaphysical. Is that a word? I don't know.
Yeah. Good point. And they totally stole that jet, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. Let's go a little bit further. When she doesn't need the jet. And Sergio, I want you to go first with this one. Okay. She first kind of floats on air currents, and then she learns to that she can really fly. Thoughts about that?
It's again, my layman like really came out while watching this movie. When I saw her trying to fly, I paused the movie and Googled, "Can Wonder Woman fly?" Because I wasn't sure.
And what did Google tell you?
Yeah, Google was like, "Yes, Wonder Woman can fly. She's been able to fly since one of the crises."
Very good, sir.
Yeah, the Google was right. I was like, "Okay, all right, cool. If this is the story they're telling to, you know, to teach Wonder Woman how to fly, fine, I get it. I don't know if I'm on board with I can fly because my dead boyfriend told me I should try.
Yeah,
don't. Is the best way to do it. But hey, whatever."
Clarence, what say ye?
Everything Sergio said. I don't know if I can.
All right.
And I mean, it just makes me wonder. I mean, just various other things. You mentioned the plane, we mentioned the flying. Like, were they intentionally trying to play up some of the stuff that we see as cheese to make it better? Or I just feel like there were several moments in this film where I wasn't sure if they were doing it intentionally because it's cheesy, or they're trying to explain it off to make it more reasonable, if that makes any sense.
All right. So I'm going to take it in a slightly different angle. I think it was they were trying to appease people like me, but they did it in a way that even though people like me appreciated it, I still think it was kind of done in a kludgy, not very well done way. Because Wonder Woman in the golden age of comics flew in the plane. Wonder Woman in the silver age of the comics still had the plane, but could float on air currents. And as Sergio said, after the original Crisis on Infinite Earths, 1985, after that, she's been able to fly ever since. So I think you saw in this movie the progression of from plane to floating to flying.
And I like, I'm down with that. Like, I want to see a superhero learn how to fly. It's entertaining like 90% of the time. This, I guess, falls into that 10% where it's like, okay, good for you, Diana.
Yeah. Good for you, Diana. And again, like, I think I just feel like stuff that's so huge or so big like this, you have to set up a little bit better. I guess they did set this up by Steve telling her, "Oh, when I'm up here, you just something with the clouds," he said. I can't remember the exact verbiage. But, you know, show her practicing it some earlier or something. I don't know. I guess I'm asking too much. So let me
ask you guys this. Does it demean Diana to have Steve in there, meaning that she can't be there by herself? She's got to have that love interest. Does that demean that character in any way, or could she have pulled it off? Because I think we were in agreement that we didn't need Steve. So I guess I'm trying to figure out what was the reason for having Steve in there.
I think it was to give her something to do.
Ouch.
I mean, not even to say that in the sexist way at all, but think about it. If she's not spending time with him while Minerva is gaining her powers, and why the Pedro Pascal, I keep getting scared, why he's developing his thing, what is she doing the whole time? So you have to give her some arc of something to do during that time. Now, they probably could have come up with something more interesting, more than likely. But if you take that away, like, what is she doing this whole time?
Good point.
And I think I'm kind of on the same page. I feel like they brought his character back thinking that they were going to squeeze him for some really serious character development for Diana. And then it just didn't happen. Because she learns how to fly, and now she can turn things invisible. I'm sure that's going to be useful. But when it comes to serious, who is Wonder Woman, we don't get any actual character development from her.
Not at all.
Mm-mm, no, not at all. Absolutely not at all.
And I feel like that's the other reason the Steve Trevor character is disappointing in this movie.
I would have rather her been trying to find, you know, spend that time with her trying to find Themyscira. And she could have even have been working with Barbara trying to find Themyscira. I just didn't get the whole Steve thing. But speaking of Paradise Island, speaking of Themyscira, what did you guys think of the opening scene? Either one of you, go for it.
It's freaking amazing. How come we couldn't just have that movie? That was an awesome 15 minutes. I could have stayed there. Oh my goodness.
I really liked it as well. And I feel like they're really onto something when it comes to let's start Wonder Woman movies with, you know, scenes from her childhood and then reflect how she's grown from the lessons of it. I feel like that's a really strong way to tell a story. I just don't know, like, did they even really hit on the lesson that she learned? If they did, it was very, very vague.
What was the lesson? Don't cheat.
Don't cheat.
Yeah.
Patience, maybe. I don't know.
And again, how does that even play into what we watched?
I know. And I'm not a scholar. I'm not going to pretend like I, you know, can put all these pieces together, but it's a Hollywood movie. Like, they should be beating us over the head with it. Right. I watched Star Wars. I know what hope is.
Yeah. I almost think they could have, I know people hate this movie, but I'm gonna say it anyway. I think they could have did something like Captain Marvel in the sense of we keep going back there for flashbacks the whole time. Cause that could have gave Diana something interesting to do besides just be with Steve the rest of the movie. You know, I think they could have, I don't know. I think they could have worked it out to where we got more Themyscira in the movie. And I think people love that. Well, for me, I love that more. I love being there more. I love the power of the women there. I love seeing the grandness. I think even on the HBO Max version, they pull it out because maybe it was shot in IMAX. So it's fully in a full screen when we're in Themyscira. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted more of that.
Yeah, me too. And again, you know, I go back to, I'm picturing in my head, you use the fact of what Barbara is. She's an archaeologist. She does all these historical things. It would make sense to, if they were working, trying to find the island since Diana can't go back, supposedly. And you interject Diana talking about when I was a child. And then as she's talking about, we see it, what she's talking about.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Kyle. Does Wonder Woman have her Lois Lane? Because Superman has all these other supporting characters. Batman does too. Like, who are Wonder Woman's supporting characters other than Steve Trevor?
All right. So she's got Etta Candy, who the version that we saw in the movie, of course, had a cameo as an older woman and has died in this movie. But in current continuity, there's a different version of Etta that is, you know, younger and is in the movie. She has Helena Sandsmark, who is an archaeologist, who is Wonder Girl's mother. So yeah, there's a whole bunch, but other than just a couple of people here and there, there aren't that many of a supporting cast. So no, she doesn't have that much supporting cast other than Donna Troy. Donna Troy would be a supporting cast. Wonder Girl would be a supporting cast. Artemis, who is someone who took the mantle from Wonder Woman for a time in the 90s, is a supporting character, and her mother. So I guess her family was more of a supporting cast than anybody.
Interesting.
Mm. I honestly would have been way more interested in this movie had they spent 20 minutes explaining how she lived for 70 years and no one said, hey, you've looked young for 30 years. How do you do it? Because they don't even gloss over it. They just ignore the fact that she clearly has to live a life where she can only keep a job for 5 years. Yeah. You know, like you can't have real friends. You can't, like, where's that story?
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That would have been interesting. Yeah. Sort of like I keep going back to Doctor Who, but how that's kind of what the Doctor's dilemma is. He outlives his companions, and part of the joy of seeing him grow and progress is seeing him live through that and try to foster new connections and things like that. So, yeah, I think that would have been a more interesting story.
So let me ask you this. Do we think that it might be a case of they loved this movie so much that you put Gal Gadot you put her in the Wonder Woman outfit, you put her on screen, everybody's going to love her because it's Wonder Woman again.
Maybe.
I feel like that's what they were hoping, maybe.
Yeah. Well, she is amazing in the movie, to be honest. She is amazing, but I think most of our problems don't stem from her directly. It's kind of the story, how the story was laid out, and some of the artistic choices.
Yep, I agree. Because she acted every part 10 out of 10, in my opinion. And she had the presence. She had the everything Wonder Woman she had in the first. It was just, she was stuck in 1984.
Yeah. And what if they would have brought Captain America up to 1984 and then bring him all the way up to our time?
Good point.
That would have felt weird, right?
Very weird. Kind of...
Yes.
Very, very weird. But it would even be more weird if one of the Infinity Stones or somehow would have brought, what was it, Peggy Carter, and brought her uh-huh. into the 80s as somebody else, you know?
Yeah. They live with that. I guess you can call it an emotional touchstone that she's older now. You know, they didn't shy away from that. It could have been, I guess she did deal with this death in this movie, but in a roundabout way, you know. And like you said, Sergio, she had all this time to actually deal with it as well. So why is it still, I don't know.
Yeah, like we saw her deal with his death once.
Right.
Like, why are we doing this again?
And even the goodbye that they had was, to me, so anticlimactic that there wasn't where he goes into the light or something. She just goes around the corner and keeps walking. But because I guess the guy couldn't go into the light because she just stops seeing, you know, Steve. And which leads me to another question. And then I promise I'm going to leave the Steve Trevor thing alone. What did you guys think of the end where she and the real guy are standing next to each other and they kind of have this, what I call, mini flirtatious moment? Thoughts?
Like, this whole conversation just has me thinking, like, so she walks away from Steve Trevor and is all like, I renounce my wish. Did not even, like, have the kindness to explain to the dude, hey, this is why you don't remember the past week or so.
Awkward.
Look, I know you don't know me, but here's what's going on. No, just let him come back. I'm sorry. It's just real weird. And the little flirtatious thing, it was cute. Fine, it was cute. Ultimately pointless, but cute.
Yep, I agree. So let me ask you guys this. Let's be positive for a moment. What did you enjoy
you <can't make> me.
most about this movie?
For me, the opening sequence was amazing. Kristen Wiig was amazing in this movie up until the last act. Gal Gadot, you say Gal Gadot was amazing. You know, she did well in this movie. I thought she was really great in this movie for what she was given. I loved seeing the progression of Kristen Wiig's character in the movie as well. But other than that, I'm trying to stay positive. It's kind of hard. Yeah, I don't know if I have much positive to say about
it. I'm going to say Kristen Wiig. Yeah, absolutely. Always hits it out of the park. I'm going to give this movie the credit that it desperately wants for the invisible jet and the Wonder Woman learning how to fly. Like 15 years from now, 25 years from now, when we talk about this movie, that's what we're going to be referring to. Well, she learned how to fly in that second movie. But other than that, I don't feel like we're really going to talk about it much because of we're staying positive. I'm sorry. We're staying positive. I like that they checked those boxes. So they're not an issue in the future.
All right. So, Sergio, I'm going to stay with you. On a rating of 1 to 5, what would you give this movie?
Ouch. I'm going to say 2. A 2. Because I talk a lot of yang about how quote-unquote bad it is. But it's not that it's bad. It's just incredibly forgettable. So I don't feel like I should be as mean as a 1. But it definitely doesn't deserve a 3.
All right. Fair enough. Clarence Brown, what say ye?
Boy. I'm probably going to say a 2 as well. I really am. Because I can think of other... Yeah, it's not horrible. It's It's just, it has a lot of problems. And I can think of other DC movies that I would rank higher than this one that people consider bad.
Oh, you're not saying you would rank Superman versus Batman better than this.
So what was the ultimate problem with Batman v Superman? What was the ultimate problem?
Okay, we don't have 3 hours.
Please tell me we're having this conversation. Yeah. Please tell me we're having this conversation.
Oh, wow.
I think it was one thing is what makes you hate the movie.
Well, it's one Lex Luthor thing. I hate, yes. And Martha, well, besides I hate.
The Martha moment. I think that's what everybody relates to. The Martha moment being the moment they're like, what the heck? I'm done. I think this movie has equally as bad moments. I really do.
Let me weigh in, please.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So Batman v Superman is a bad movie. Like that's established. But if I'm going to sit down and watch a movie, I think I'm going to watch it before I'll watch this again. Not because it's better. I feel like it takes bigger swings. Like, it's way more audacious than this movie is.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I can watch Batman v Superman and be like, man, they messed that up. But I can enjoy hating it. I can't even enjoy hating this movie.
Because you don't hate this movie. So see,
I don't. It's just meh. Meh.
Well, I would rather have a meh than a bleh.
Like hating a movie more than indifference. And this movie is just aggressively indifferent.
I will give you that. And that is on point. It is indifferent. And it's not like I can think of Batman versus Superman and think I'm not going to waste my time watching this or even give anybody the satisfaction of saying that I've watched it again. That being said, if I'm going to watch this movie again, I will go ahead and say my favorite scene out of the movie along with my rating, which my favorite scene out of the movie was
not in a movie.
Was not even in the movie. My favorite scene was the after credit, whatever scene. That is what I will watch over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Not the movie. So if I were to rate the movie, I'm going to stay with you guys. I'm going to give the movie a 2, but I will give the after scene another point. So if you want to average that together, however you want to, 2.5 or whatever. But that's my rating because I love the freaking after scene.
That's fair.
Cool.
Did anyone have thoughts on 1984 going to Hell in a Handbasket? With the whole nukes and everybody making wishes, everybody greedy. And that was a bit much for me to watch in 2020, personally. Man, I can't take this.
Yeah. And to counter that, and Clarence, I know you and I talked the other night and we agreed that the answer to this, I think, is yes. But Sergio, did you think this final scene at Christmas, do you think that was in the original movie, or did they add that on because it was coming out on Christmas Day?
No, I'm sure it was part of the movie the whole time.
Eh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I feel like it was tacked on at the end.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it was, too. Because otherwise, it wouldn't make much, unless they were trying to signify the end of 1984. I could see that.
That's possible.
Possible, yeah. That makes sense. Well, gentlemen, I think what makes sense at this point, since we've kind of butchered this movie up a little bit, but hey, you know, it is what it is from 1984. So, Sergio, where else could you be found on the internet?
You can find me on Reality Breached at realitybreached.com or on Facebook, Twitter. We have both of those handles. I podcast a lot on that. Right now, we're really plugging our Debriefing and Cocktails podcast, which is our overview of the James Bond franchise. We're having a lot of fun watching all those movies, and I implore everyone to go check it out. It's fun.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Clarence Brown, what about you?
For me, we're wrapping up the Star Trek Discovery Season 3. It's come to a close in the next few weeks, and you can check out DiscussingTrek.com, where we cover each and every episode.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, for me, I would direct anyone listening to us to Discussing Network to find out all the things that we as a network are working on. Sergio, it is always a pleasure having you on. Thanks for coming on such short notice. As again, always a pleasure. And for everyone listening, thank you for being a listener in 2020. This is our last recording of Discussing Comics in 2020. So thank you for listening. And we will be back, not next time, well, next time, but it will be 2021.
Amen to that.
And that's a wrap.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.